Biochem lecture for November 2, 2009.
It's November 2, and we're still dealing with the tail end of chapter 13. I'm going to have a friend of mine help me out starting this week, loading all the lectures onto the all the audio lectures on, so we should get them done, I hope, today. Okay. So all the audio lectures should go on today. And we'll just go on from there then. And I'll try to get all the homework back to you tonight. And we will see how all that works out. Do you recognize this kind of inhibition? And I presume it's coming up there. Do you recognize this kind of inhibition? Can someone tell me what it is? Despite the fact it's right there in front of you. Can you identify it without having the material right in front of you? That's the question. Now, what is the mechanism for that inhibitor? If you're going to have a... We have the ubiquitous and very useful model of ES yielding reversibly ES complex yielding the product plus the enzyme. This is overly simplified and completely actually ridiculous, but it works pretty well for a first for a beginning. In this kind of competitive inhibition, where is the inhibitor attacking? Where is it attacking? The enzyme. Now, there are two forms of the enzyme, the free enzyme and the enzyme substrate. What's it attacking? Free enzyme. And so you can say the enzyme plus this inhibitor reacts reversibly to form this EI. And, of course, you get a KI with this, some sort of strength of inhibitor from this. And the EI will not produce any product. There's no product from this. This is a dead end. Okay. Dead end. That's not an official enzyme terminology word, but that's what I'm using today. It simply doesn't produce anything. And so the particular slope of that line then, that gross external data, that black, this is the classic black box here, in which you've got data input, you know, and then you've got an output. And the output is this particular diagram. That's the output. This output then points to the black box, and that black box is the mechanism. And that mechanism is this thing, from what they've been able to tell. So you need to be able to connect the kinds of Lineweaver-Burk plots that you see there with the mechanism that you have on this, right? Oh, these kinds of mechanisms. Okay, boom, 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 boom. I don't know why they're in that particular order. Who knows why they're in that particular order? PowerPoint is the strange thing that it is. So there's competitive, there's uncompetitive, and there's mixed or non-competitive. And when the mixed is much more descriptive, indicating that it's both types. And but you can also, in fact, calculate that KI. Let's take a look at what we're looking at here. We can see that the Michaelis-Menten equation, I think this is now new material, is that correct? The Michaelis-Menten equation now has a new term when there's an inhibitor present. That new term is called alpha, right there. And the alpha is known as 1 plus the inhibitor concentration over the KI. 1 plus the inhibitor concentration over the KI. The interesting mental gymnastics thing here is if they have the I, the concentration of I, all over the KI, the units then have to cancel, which means the KI and the concentration of the inhibitor will have the same units. That's just an algebraic result of this process. So the I and the KI will have the same concentration units in order for them to cancel out. So, So the Lineweaver-Burk plot then, when you include this alpha term in it for this kind of line, then becomes this. 1 over V0 equals alpha KM over Vmax plus 1 over S plus 1 over Vmax. Okay. Okay. Now, the little thing that you, one of the interesting things here that you see is one of the direct outcomes of this particular kind of thing is the fact that, do you see any change in the Vmax here? In the presence or absence of inhibitor. Do you see any change? No. Do you see a change in the presence or absence in the KM? Yes, you do. Absolutely. And so what happens is we get a new term that's called a KM apparent. Now, KM apparent. It's sometimes in parentheses, it's sometimes not. KM apparent is actually equal to alpha KM. KM apparent equals alpha KM. So what that means is that this is the KM in the presence of inhibitor. The KM in presence of inhibitor is equal to this alpha unit, this alpha term, times the regular KM. Now this KM, this thing, is without. Do you understand that W/O means without? Without inhibitor. Without inhibitor. So this is the KM that you get when there's no inhibitor present. This is the KM when you get when there is a inhibitor present. And according to this mathematical identity, you are able to connect this value with the original uninhibited value by multiplying it by that KM. Multiplying it by that alpha unit, that alpha term. And of course, we can expand that alpha term by saying 1 plus inhibitor all over KI times the KM, the uninhibited KM. So this actually then, you can say, KM apparent. Now, all the stuff we're talking about here, I wish I could put on this test, but I said I wouldn't. So, lucky you. So we're going to start off with this stuff on the next test, is this. But then this test coming up is going to make you calculate Vmax and KM. All right? Are you ready for that? Or whatever, however that goes. So, you need to download the practice homework from D2L, because I have both the homework and the key there. And so, you need to make sure, you need to attempt the homework without having looking at the key. Once you attempt the homework diligently, like a good student, then you can look at the key. Now, it's going to be a big download, because it's actually scanned value. I mean, I had it all penciled in, and so it's all scanned value. I hope you can print it out without too much trouble. Okay. So, notice here, and just the idea here is this alpha KM term is altering the slope, but it's not altering the y-intercept. That's why you get this strange thing. You get the flattest slope is with no inhibitor. As you increase the concentration or effect of the inhibitor, the slope increases, but it still crosses through the same point. What kind of inhibition is that called? What kind of inhibition is it called? Competitive. All right? Competitive. I know it's right there, but please. Uncompetitive. This one is where the lines are parallel. in which there is a alpha term here. And this is where this alpha term both affects, let's see here. The alpha term affects this substrate concentration. And notice there's no change in the slope. And let's go on here and see. Come on. There we go. That's the equation I'm looking for. So tell me, what's the mechanism for this uncompetitive business? What is it attacking? What's the uncompetitive inhibitor attacking? Yeah, the enzyme substrate only, isn't it? And notice, how have they differentiated it from the previous alpha? They call this a what? Alpha prime. Okay, that's not a trivial thing. That's absolutely true. Now, we get these nice parallel lines, and the easiest, fastest way to obtain the correct alpha value is to realize, well, if there's a Km apparent, you can also have something known as a Vmax apparent. Vmax apparent is going to be equal to the alpha prime, let's see here, all over, let's see here, this is going to be a 1 over, this is going to be 1 over the alpha Vmax. Wait a minute. No. It's the alpha primes on top. Okay, so it's going to be equal to this. Alpha prime all over Vmax. So we have basically have the same situation here. With the Vmax apparent as we do with the Km apparent, in which the Km apparent is equal to some modified version of the original Vmax, or the Vmax apparent is a modified version of the original Vmax. In this case, it's got an alpha prime on top, and that alpha prime, of course, is still equal to what? What's that alpha prime equal to? 1 plus I over K prime I. And we use the K prime because it's acting at that enzyme substrate plus enzyme mode. So this is right here. So we have I reversible. But that's, this forms a K I prime. And you get this E S I intermediate, of course, which is not... doesn't go on to produce a product. And so that is this alone, not including this, this alone is the uncompetitive part of it. And you get those parallel lines and a Vmax apparent. You could also have a Km apparent, and it's the same alpha prime. Km apparent, same alpha prime. And finally, mixed, or what they call non-competitive, it's just, they're just trying to make a phrase here. So in this one, of course, there's an alpha unit attacking the Km and an alpha prime attacking the S. The inhibitor term, of course, is still the two same. Alpha is equal to 1 plus I over Ki, and alpha prime is equal to 1 over I plus all over Ki, K prime I. And the Langweaver-Burk plot is right there. And you can tell it gets very, very complicated very quickly. What typically happens is with this mixed inhibition, they idealize it. They idealize it by having that point land right on top of the substrate concentration or substrate line. They idealize it. Are you done writing that stuff in yet? Okay. How's your guys' stress level? You guys have a big systems test this week, too. Is that correct? Is it, when is it? Is that today?
Friday.
What?
Friday.
Oh, Friday? I saw Dr. Stout duplicating something today. I thought it might have been that test. Okay, is everybody done writing that in, more or less? Quite. I want to show you what the idealized form. Notice how these lines intersect above the horizontal axis. In an idealized system, they can produce that. Non-competitive. This, again, is... they can have the... So this one and these two lines all are dealing with non-competitive or mixed. This is mixed, but it's mixed in which the... it's an idealized version of it, which the x-intercept meets. 99% of the time, the intercept is above or below the line of the of the concentration. Yes? Yeah. It's the same thing. So pure, yeah. So when they have it land right here, yeah, they use the word pure, right? Yeah. I call it idealized. It's the same thing. Pure, ideal. Yes, yes indeed. Now, okay. What did I do with that? In your, did anybody have the printout of what I posted yesterday? The homework? Anybody have that perchance? You do? Oh, wonderful. Okay. Thank you. You'll see, and of course, this man is genius here. He's printed this out. Was it difficult to print out? Everything went out real well? Yeah. And then, of course, you have the scanned answers in the back here. I'd like for you to, just as practice, go ahead and plot. Notice the question I asked you did not ask about the inhibition. I simply asked you to give me the Km and Vmax of this. What I'd like for you to do is plot that third column right here and then tell me what kind of inhibition it was. Now, just as practice, this is not necessarily for to turn in, but there is that inhibitor line which I did not block out, and so you could do this kind of work and tell me what kind of inhibition is being given. And if you wanted to go on, you could even tell me what the Km, Vmax, and the Ki would be, because they tell you what the concentration of the inhibitor was. I've not given that to you, however, as an answer. Well, I did, actually. If you can see on question, I know, when you download it, you'll see question, it says question 3, then 4. Question 3 is what's on your handout. Question 4 was a different numerical system. You'll see that down here at the bottom, you get your Vmaxes and your Kms, but over here on the extreme right-hand side, you'll see what's known as a Km apparent and a Vmax apparent. And that comes from plotting that second data line. And see if you can match that up. That would be an excellent exercise for you. All right. Now. All right. Well, we have done looking at the mathematics. Now, other than a little bit of dealing with hemoglobin binding, you're done with mathematics in this semester. What? Yeah, there's a little bit of saturation kinetics going on in the oxygen binding, but we'll get to that here pretty quickly. Just want to give you a quick idea. You know, I told you about the story of penicillin and how this poor man died, even though he was given a couple of injections of fairly crude penicillin. This is what they've discovered after much work in the 70s and 80s, exactly what was happening with that penicillin. You had this penicillin material, And this R group that you see up here that says variable, that's where you get the various kinds of penicillin. Various kinds of penicillin. But the active ring is this lactam, that there's a glycopeptide transpeptidase. This is an enzyme that's on the surface of the bacteria used for making the cell wall. Penicillin would come in here and covalently bind to the active site. That serine in that O, in other words, the active site of that enzyme had a serine as an important part of its mechanism. And the serine would accidentally bind to this particular group that break that bond right there, bind to it permanently. That's a covalent bond, and block the site. So normal substrates couldn't fit in there because the penicillin was in there. The enzyme became useless. The bacteria could not form cell wall. Its growth is slowed, and the immune system can then have a chance to overwhelm the slow bacterial infection, and then kill it. Penicillin does not work if you don't have any kind of immune system. So all the antibiotics do is simply slow down their growth to allow the immune system catch up. So if you have HIV and you've got a bad infection or something, and your immune system is really compromised, they've got problems, real problems. They can slow down the bacteria, but if your immune system can't capture the ones that can't kill the ones that are already there, then there's not much help for you. All right, now, before we go on, I'd like for you to, if you don't mind, we're going to go now to have two or three questions here dealing with, what did I do here? We're going to go ahead and engage our clicker systems just as a break and see if you can answer some of these. Two or three very simple questions. Break right in here. All right. Let's go ahead and start this. The graph represents what kind of inhibition? Do you recognize that already? Can you tell me without looking at your notes? Is that uncompetitive, competitive, non-competitive, mixed? What kind of inhibition is that? What kind of inhibition is that? Uncompetitive, non-competitive, mixed. And the answer is A is absolutely correct. It's the parallel one. A is the parallel one. Good. 80% of you got that. Good. The next one. Mechanism represents what kind of inhibition? Uncompetitive, mixed, non-competitive, competitive. What kind of inhibition is this? Uncompetitive, mixed in competitive, non-competitive, competitive. Can someone tell me what you're doing when you get an X in front of it? I just saw a big red X. Are you trying to input a number that's not there or something? Excellent. 82, the percent question, this is 84%. It's competitive. When the inhibitor is attacking directly the free enzyme, that's competitive. There's no such thing as mixed competitive. And non-competitive is something completely different. And last question is, KCAT is identical to what microscopic rate constant? KCAT is identical to what microscopic rate constant? K, K2, K-1, K3. KCAT is identical to what microscopic rate constant? KCAT. All right? KCAT. Very good. It is K2. K2, it's this thing right here. This thing. That thing is also called KCAT. KCAT. Catalytic. Don't know why, but it just is. All right, let's do something a little different today. I'm starting to get concerned. We're having fewer and fewer people show up to class. Let's take attendance today. And I'm going to start letting people know I noticed that they were not there. All right, and let's start. All you need to do is just send something. Is that correct? Should I turn off the names here? So we'll give you... when you see your thing, let's take a look at that. Everybody attended that they know? Everybody here? You getting it to attend? Is it getting it to work? Anybody's not working? Yours is not working? Is it joined? Oh, 30. Did you get 32 now? You're number what? 20? Okay. All right. Are you joined? It's not working at all, huh? Okay, how's your battery doing? Now 20's there. Are you 20 on now? I think you're there. We can find out. Are you there? Are you there? What did I do that for? I want to show the student names at 20. Are you there? There you are. You're there. Excellent. Let's end it. Thank you so much. I'm grateful for you letting me take attendance. Let people know I'm going to start taking attendance a little more regularly because I'm getting a little unhappy with the number of people showing up because it means that they're going to do poorly on the standardized test, and that just annoys me to no end because it really reflects badly on the class as a whole, and there are a faithful many that come, but they were being dragged down by the faithless few. Okay, what is the kinetic behavior of enzymes catalyzing bimolecular reactions? Enzymes, not surprisingly, often use two or more substrates. In other words, this model that you see here is an idealized one that is very handy for making some things. But notice here, you know, this actually doesn't make that much sense. Here you've got a microscopic mechanism. You have the enzyme substrate, and it immediately makes the product in the enzyme. If this was reversible, and it is reversible, 90% of the enzymes are reversible, what you have here is upon binding, it changes back to the substrate, and that's not realistic. So this is a very handy mechanism, but it's not all that realistic. But two or more substrates binding together can produce a much more realistic mechanism. Reactions may be sequential or single displacement. They can be random or ordered. What are they talking about here? You need to be able to identify the kind of this kind of mechanism, or if I give you the name of the mechanism, to reproduce this kind of mechanism. These three mechanisms are a much more rational set of mechanisms than this one down here. Let's take a look at actually the middle one first, the ordered by mechanism. As, of course, as I wave what? Bye-bye. Exactly. Thank you very much. Now, notice what happens here, and this is much more rational. You've got the free enzyme. The A reactant binds to produce an intermediate called AE. The B reactant then binds to form an intermediate called AEB. And the enzyme then acts as a transfer agent, changing both A and B to P and Q, which are the products. Then the Q falls off, then the P falls off, in that order. That's why they call it ordered by. B can't bind until A does, P can't fall off until Q falls off. That's why they call it ordered by. Here you have the one on the top called the random bye-bye. Just saying bye-bye to anybody. Exactly. Bye. Did I say hello? No. So what happens here is you can produce EAB by either binding A first or B first. So with the A first, you get this A intermediate. Then the B comes in, which is not shown here, but the B comes in to form that AEB. Or you combine B first to get the EB, then A comes in to form the AEB. There's a transformation with both substrates bound. There's an exchange or some modification. You simultaneously get two new products, PQ. And in this case, Q can fall off to produce EP and get the then P falls off. Or Q falls off to form EQ and you get E and Q falling off. In other words, it doesn't matter if A or B binds first or if P or Q falls off. That's why they call it what? Random. And contrast with the ordered bye-bye mechanism, where A must bind, then B must bind, then Q has to fall off, then P falls off. In that order. Then you've got this ping-pong mechanism, which I really enjoy. Notice, ping-pong, I've got a little copyright term there. That's okay. Because actually, ping-pong is a copyrighted term by some company for table tennis. Okay? So it's not an American, you know, you don't go to the ping-pong world championships because they have to pay that company some money for using the word ping-pong. They call it table tennis. But here the ping-pong mechanism is what it's called because it is very descriptive. A binds to the enzyme. It modifies covalently the enzyme. Notice the enzyme now moves from E to E prime. So now you have an E prime, and the A has been transformed into the P product. The P falls off. You now have a modified free enzyme that's known as E prime. B then binds to E prime B. The modified enzyme then transforms the B to form the Q product. The Q falls off, and we have the E enzyme ready to go again. Does it make sense why they call this the ping-pong mechanism? Back and forth. Back and forth. Very, very important. These mechanisms, when I first saw this, and see, I didn't see this until graduate school. These mechanisms hadn't shown up until graduate school. I saw this when I was in college. I didn't see this until mechanism. Now, you're getting to see it in college. Woo-hoo. I know you're excited by that. Now, here you go. Oh, my goodness. What in the world are you talking about here, Dr. Novak? Single displacement bisubstrate mechanism. Okay. Double reciprocal plots of the rates observed with different fixed concentrations of one substrate are graphed versus a series of concentrations of A. Okay. Notice that in these Lineweaver-Burk plots for single displacement bisubstrate mechanisms, the lines intersect to the left of the 1 over V axis. What this is you've got a fixed, you've got a fixed concentration of, oh yeah, all right. So, what do we got going on here? All right, so you got A plus B yields reversibly C plus D. Well, I don't want C and D. I want to use P and Q. P and Q. This is the mechanism here. All right. I mean, this is the overall reaction. It doesn't say anything about the mechanism. What they've done here is they've had a series of reactions in which they held B constant. They had one value of B, and then they did like 1A, and then 2A, and 3A, and 4A. Then they did 2 times B, then they did a 1A, or 2A, 3A, and these should be concentrations, by the way. Not relative proportions. This is concentrations. So what they've done is, in order to get this B right here, that sees the B that just has just the B, and how they got this slope, they've held B constant and done a series of varying concentrations of A. Notice this substrate. Where is this? Notice substrate right there is the A, the horizontal line. And so you end up having a various They have fixed B and variable concentrations of A, and they get this line right here, that first line. Then they double the concentration of B and do the A all over again. That's where they get this line. Then they triple the concentration of B and do a variety of A's again, and that's where they get this line. So you have a fixed B, but a variable A. Fixed B and a variable A, but they're changing the B's. Yes, I know, but this whole line is a whole series of experiments. So that's why they call it a fixed B. But Dr. Novak, I mean, that looks exactly like what kind of inhibition? Somebody say mixed. Mixed. Yes, it does. You're absolutely right. It does. You can... So what happens here is this means that the presence of A affects how B binds. That's what this means when it's up here like this. Presence of A affects how B binds. In this case, where this is a pure non-competitive, this is where the A does not affect B binding and vice versa. So you see that. And lastly, here is a this represents the double displacement ping pong bisubstrate mechanism, parallel lines. All right. So, what do I have to know for the test coming up in another couple weeks, Dr. Novak? What you need to be able to do is the following. If I tell you there is an inhibitor present, then these lines represent the effect on the inhibitor. If I tell you, however, do I have to go back through all this? If I tell you, however, that there is no inhibitor present, that it's a bisubstrate mechanism, then you should be able to tell me what these lines mean in terms of which mechanism is which. What kind of mechanism? Is it ordered? Is it random? Is it ping pong? Obviously here, the easiest one to recognize immediately, if this is not an inhibition type reaction, this is the ping pong. Okay. Now, why do I have this? This is... Oh, I see. This is the classic kind of ping pong. This is a double displacement bisubstrate. This is the classic ping pong. Let's see here. It's where you've got the reactants are glutamate and oxaloacetate, and the products are alpha-ketoglutarate and aspartate. So under here, put down R for reactant, or R or S under the glutamate, S for substrate, P for product under the aspartate and alpha-ketoglutarate. Does that make sense? Do I need... R, or it's either for the glutamate, you can put down, I'll just say substrate. Put down S under the oxaloacetate, put down S for the substrate. Okay. And then under the aspartate and the alpha-ketoglutarate, put down P for product. But notice here, you've got the glutamate that comes in and reacts with this enzyme and produces a modified enzyme. What's the difference between this E form and the E prime form? What's the difference? Can you tell? What's the difference? The presence of the what? The nitrogen right here. Okay. So the glutamate comes in as a substrate, reacts with the enzyme, and releases one of the products called the alpha-ketoglutarate. Then the other substrate, oxaloacetate, then binds with this E prime form where that nitrogen is, and the enzyme transfers that nitrogen to the oxaloacetate to make it, changing it from oxaloacetate to what? Aspartate, and restoring the original enzyme to its unmodified form. So notice, you got the ping and then the pong. All right? Ping pong. King Kong. Ping. You guys. All right. All right. Now, this is we're now getting a little bit far afield, but I just want to show you that example. Now then, are all enzymes proteins? No, not really. They've discovered some ribozymes, RNase P, and peptidoglycan transferase, abzymes, antibodies raised to bind the transition state of a reaction of interest. For a while there, they were injecting cocaine addicts with antibodies who captured cocaine in a transition form to help hydrolyze it. So they inject. If you injected an addict with this particular type of antibody, and then they would snort the cocaine, or if they used crack, they'd breathe it in like a smoke. They'd get no high out of it whatsoever, because as soon as that cocaine got in the bloodstream where those antibodies were, the catalytic antibodies converted that cocaine into a benign form, and they got no high out of it. Unfortunately, those enzymes, those antibodies had to be injected continually just about, because they kept being swept out of the system. So it was a good idea, but it didn't work all that well. We're going to skip this mechanism here. Figure 1324 in your handout. We're going to skip this one, 1325. Skip this one, and this is catalytic antibodies. All I need for you to know is on the fit, what you've been given is the 1326, figure 1326 in the handout. Underline the first comment in the phrase there at the bottom. Catalytic antibodies are designed to specifically bind the transition state intermediate in a chemical reaction, which means that we'll accelerate the reaction a lot by binding the transition state. That's a concept we'll look at later on in chapter 14. An antigen is used to create an AB enzyme with aminotransferase activity. You can skip this. Figure 1327. How can enzymes be so specific? Well, obviously, if you recall, early in this particular chapter, we talked about two kinds of specificity. What were the two kinds of specificity we talked about? Geometric and stereo. Which one is, according to my lecture, which one is more specific? Or is the word more stringent? Remember that word that caught people off guard? Which one's more stringent? The geometric, that's right. And so, now then, lock and key is the first explanation for specificity, because they thought the enzyme was fixed in space. It was like a rigid structure. But enzymes, proteins, are not rigid. They breathe. They kind of are a molten. They just kind of sit there and just blob. If you listen carefully to an enzyme solution, you can hear them. Have you ever heard an enzyme solution say that? Hold, next time you have an enzyme solution, hold up to your ear. P.S. If anybody sees anybody doing that, do me a favor in the background, go. Okay? I heard it, Dr. Novak. I know you did. Yes, it's okay. All right. They sit there and they're literally just sitting there. I mean, you've seen video games in which the players, rather than being stiff, frozen like this, they kind of stand there and move a little bit, right? Video games? Kingdom, my son, many years ago, were playing Kingdom Hearts or something like this. And the main player would sit there with a weapon or something and just kind of sit there and wait for you to do something else. I never could get him to move, so I always lost to my son. But at any rate, that's what enzymes are doing. They're just kind of sitting there. They are conformational change. They're constantly wobbling in that conformation. The induced fit provides a much more accurate description. Okay. And that's why Gretchen always has this mechanism down well, because if there's anything she knows about having an induced fit. At any rate, so thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. So, what you see here, roughly drawn to scale, my goodness, notice how water is very small in all this. This is a hexokinase molecule. Oh, hexokinase. I wonder where we've seen hexokinase before. Anybody recognize hexokinase? Name the mechanism. Name the pathway that has hexokinase in it. And silence was upon the face of the deep. How about glycolysis? Did anybody remember glycolysis? I had that in my mind. I didn't want to say it out loud to embarrass myself. Did you really? You did? Anybody else hear it? Okay. Did you hear it? Oh, maybe. I know. You sit next to her. You got to be friends. Okay, so at any rate, so what happens here is this water, the glycerol and glucose. Well, I don't know why they have glycerol in there. But at any rate, what happens is there's a cleft, and this is the last comment. There's a cleft. I mean, literally, how can I describe this? There's a cleft. The hexokinase is sitting there like this. And as water and glucose approach, well, as glucose approaches, that cleft closes and excludes water. The cleft closes, literally, and excludes water to enhance the reactivity of it. And so these things, obviously, are not fixed in space. They are mobile. They are movable, and therefore an induced fit where the substrate encourages the enzyme to fold appropriately and create an increased likelihood of reaction occurs. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you on the morrow. Is that correct?